Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Android Faithful. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the world of Android coming into beta. I don't know, something about beta. I'm Ron Richards, and with me as always...
Yeah, I'm Jason Howell, just getting down.
And I'm Wintwit Dow.
And I'm Michelle Ramon.
All right, the gang
Wintwit
is...
down.
The gang is all back together. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. I missed you guys last week.
We missed you too, but did you have fun?
Yeah, no, I did. I was in New York City going to see a band called Swami and the Bed of Nails, featuring the talented John Reese of Drive Like Jehu and Rocket from the Crypt.
Well, that's a good name.
I went to 4 shows in the span of 5 days.
Are you a teenager?
I know.
How do you do that?
I saw the Magnetic Fields 2 nights in a row. Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday I went to a hardcore matinee at the Bowery Ballroom where I saw Civ and Shelter, and then I took Monday off, and then Tuesday I went to see Swami and the Bed of Nails, and that show, the doors opened at 9 o'clock, and did not go on until 10:30, and not get home until after 1, and I am not young anymore. It was still worth every minute of it. It was fun.
You pulled it off, and you didn't just do one crazy show like that. You did a bunch in the string.
And I was in the crowd noting the types of phones everyone is using to take pictures and videos. And
people in the pit holding up their folds?
They were. I haven't seen any foldables.
How many tablets did you see being held up?
Yeah. No tablets, thankfully. No, but I did see a couple of Samsungs in the pit there with me with my Pixel. I didn't see any other Pixels, but it was a fun time. It was your return show after being in Japan. I missed that last week. Did you have a good trip?
I did. I had a great trip. I also tried to note what phones people had, although there was a lot of tourists, so my sampling is skewed. And also in Japan, it's not really like great to like invade people's privacy. So I was like trying to like surreptitiously like, you know,
lean over. That's a great tease because we actually got an email about that very topic. So everybody stay tuned to the show later on at the end of the show when we read your emails, some cool travel emails in there. But before we get started, I want to remind everybody that if you like Android Faithful. If you like listening to us for an hour and 20 minutes on average a week, four times a month, you could support us directly by going over to patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. We love our patrons. You guys are awesome. We are here for you. By signing up on Patreon, you get access to our exclusive Discord. You get to vote for a story that we talk about on the podcast you'll hear later today. If you sign up at various different levels, you get some merch. You can get an exclusive t-shirt, stickers, that sort of thing. It's all at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. And we are exploring ways to make it even better. So if you've been on the fence and you haven't signed up for Patreon, let us know why you haven't and what you want out of supporting Android Faithful. You can email us at contact@AndroidFaithful.com. But seriously, you know, we thank everybody who's supporting us. You guys are awesome. It is such a small percentage of you folks who are listening. So if you're thinking about it, you know, it's priced, you know, the right price there. Just, you know, the cost of a cup of coffee, you could support us for $5 a month. At $10 a month, you can get an ad-free version of the audio podcast. And we're working on different options to give you some cool video stuff there as well. So, yeah, so go to patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. We really, 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 really appreciate it.
And I mean, for that one person out there that's like, you know, I've got like $500 a month that I want to just blow on my favorite podcast. You can do that too. We're just saying, we're not going to turn you down. You'd be the patron of the month.
And if you are the patron of the month, only one person can be the patron of the month, and you can come on the show with us.
That's you.
Yeah. And you can be in the chair talking about Android with us. I dare you to do it.
So. Yeah. Make us eat our words. Make us bring you on the show. That's all you got to do.
For $500.
All right. So thank you everybody for your support. That said, yes, Android 15 drumbeat rolling on. Michal, what is the latest with Android 15?
So let me switch over to... There we go. So Android 15, you know, we've already had the developer preview 1 in February, then developer preview 2 in March, and now in April, actually last week, Google released the first beta of Android 15. So Android 15 beta 1 was released. And on the surface, if you just read the blog post, there's not really much to talk about. Dave Burke, the VP of Engineering at Google, talked about a couple of major changes that I wanted to highlight, including a new edge-to-edge by default mode in Android 15 for apps that are targeting Android 15. So there aren't any apps that are targeting Android 15 at the moment because it's not even something that developers can do. You can't release apps that target Android 15 yet. But by default, once those apps are able to be released to the Google Play targeting Android 15, you'll see on the screen right here, on the left, you have an app that's not enabled with edge-to-edge mode. On the right, you do have an app enabled with edge-to-edge mode. And what this will enable is that app content will be able to be drawn underneath the system bar, so the navigation bar and the status bar. This is something that apps have been able to do for a very long time on their own, but a lot of apps just have not enabled it, and there's various reasons for that. You know, it really depends on the app and the developer that's making it, but now it seems Google wants app developers to actually take advantage of the full screen, and so they're going to start enforcing it. And I know when this is going to draw some thoughts from developers. I wanted to hear, like, what do you think about this change?
It's going to be a freaking pain in the ass. And I say that because actually today for my current gig, I actually am dealing with not this specific thing. I'm not dealing with the fact that edge to edge is being enforced on me. Edge to edge is a choice that I'm making at the job that I'm doing. And I'm having to rejigger some of the things in the UI to make it work. So I don't know. I mean, being able to handle any case, whether that's immersive mode or not, like any kind of like form factor is something that you should be doing as an Android dev. I don't necessarily see immersive mode as something, and I've already said this before, I don't really see it as being necessary for everyone to do. And it can be a real time sink. I mean, that was literally my entire afternoon is trying to figure out how to render the spacing behind the status bar and the navigation bar and the keyboard correctly. And it's actually not that easy depending on how your UI is set up.
But if it was supported at the OS level, would that make it easier for the developer then?
It just can't be because your content, because like, so what happens is that once your content starts like going edge to edge, then you have to deal with it. And surprisingly, sometimes you think, I mean, like in like most cases, I'll say like, let's say 80% of cases, you won't really have to change much. But in like that last 20% of cases, especially if you're like, you know, the job I'm on where everything is like highly custom component, which actually a lot of companies do, they do like highly customized thing, especially if it's like a big company and they want like a strong brand identity and design system across all their experiences, then they start really getting into like customizing everything. That's when it's a real pain in the butt. And I'm talking like big companies, not like, you know, some nerdy developer who's like a UI addict and just wants to do everything themselves. It's like really big companies. So it's normally fine 80% of the time, but that last 20%, man, it's my afternoon. So I don't know. I guess I kind of, I'm just curious about the reason for it, but it's coming. We're going to deal with it.
Because it looks cool.
I guess.
That's why.
I guess.
I mean, it's immersive. I mean, VR, everything's immersive these days. So that could be a part of it.
Yeah. But if you're a media app, you probably already have immersive mode turned on. I'm still like my favorite example, of course, is the banking app, or I don't know, pick your favorite boring, useful, but boring app. I don't know. Instacart? Does Instacart need to be immersive or some other like related, like, I don't know. Anyway, no, I'm not happy. I'm going to be spending a lot of continued dev hours on this, and I'm sure someone else will. So anyway, that's my thoughts.
All right.
Edge-to-edge mode isn't the only major change in Android 15 beta. There's also, as mentioned on the blog post, app archiving support. So this is something that was actually released in Developer Preview 2, but Google is now choosing to actually highlight it and basically tell developers, hey, this is coming. You need to get prepared for it. So I'm just going to do a quick demo here. I have a Pixel 6a running the Android 15 beta 1 release, and I have this app Flipboard here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open its app info page. Then here you see there's a button called Archive. If I just tap this, it'll archive Flipboard. And so now it's not available. It's not installed, but the data that I previously had is kept there. So if I just tap on the icon, it'll just re-download it from Google Play, and then I can relaunch it, and I'll be back into the app. And none of my data will have been lost.
I do like how the icon is the same kind of little cloud with an arrow icon, like in Google Drive with files and things like that. Mm. It's very unified across, obviously, from you know, like it just feels like it belongs, right? So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool. Very intentional. And this is actually, so if I just go back to the blog post, this is actually a feature that Google Play has had for some time now. Actually, it says right here, Android and Google Play announced support for app archiving last year. But what Android 15 is doing is it's building this feature into the OS so that other app stores can implement their own app archiving feature so they can take advantage of the same capability that Google Play already has. And, you know, they're introducing API so that launcher developers like Nova Launcher and other app stores can implement the same kind of functionality that Google Play and the stock launcher have.
That is nice.
There's a couple of other changes here. One of the ones, actually, Ron, I'll let you mention.
Well, it was we were really excited because we were talking, you know, obviously Android 15 beta is, you know, a hot topic and that sort of thing. In the pre-show of the live stream, which, by the way, you can watch us live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on YouTube and on Twitch. You can find the links at androidfaithful.com. But in the YouTube chat, one of our viewers, Blind Android, shared that he said, a feature request I got submitted about a year ago made it into the Android 15 beta. Now when you use TalkBack guidance is provided when using the fingerprint sensor, move up, move left, etc. So user by the name of Blind Android, that's very cool. You and everyone else listening, if you submit a feature, someday it might make it in. I think you're the first person I've ever heard that definitively says, I submitted a feature and it's in the beta. That's pretty cool. So, and it's great to see more accessibility options and more accessibility functionality. And it shows that they are listening to users, whether we believe it or not. And in fact, that's a teaser for another story later in the show as well. So I'm all about teases today.
All right. Cool. And of course, that was just what was officially announced in the blog post. As always, on all the social media platforms, I do my deep dive into what's new, and there's always a lot of stuff that Google doesn't mention in their blog posts. Like, for example, this new default wallet app feature. So for those of you who don't know, you can set a default contactless payment app under settings and NFC, then contactless payments. And this app basically is the default app that handles a transaction when you tap your phone against a, you know, NFC terminal. And what Android 15 Beta 1 is doing is they're changing that default payment app page to default wallet app. And I can actually show you it right here, because this is actually live in Android 15 Beta 1. So under default apps at the very bottom, you can see wallet app at the bottom. And right now, Google Wallet is there. If I had the American Express app installed, that would also show up. There's not many apps that can be set as a default wallet app, just Google Wallet and American Express, as far as I can tell. And basically, this is just a rebranded version of that default contactless payments page that I talked about previously. That, in fact, that page no longer exists. When you go to the NFC settings, I can show you quickly, and you tap on... Oh, actually, that's another thing I'll bring up. NFC is broken in this release, so do not install Android 15 Beta 1 on your phone if you rely on contactless payments. That's a warning.
Oh.
That's a very important warning. Very, I think we should have gone out there.
Oh,
yes,
that's
actually relevant
something.
To a future. That's actually relevant to one of the future things I'm going to talk about. So anyways, back to the default wallet thing. I don't really know why they're changing this. I speculate in this article I read for Android Headlines potential reasons why, but I honestly don't know. There are a couple other changes.
Why would they allow to change the default wallet? Like, would they allow you to use someone else's wallet? Like,
Technically,
right?
The default, you can, unlike iOS, you can change the default app that handles NFC payments, and that is basically your default wallet app already.
All right. So I mean, you get choice in Android. So I guess that makes sense with the whole paradigm of Android, and that we've got more control than iOS. So cool. All right.
All right. That's by far not the only thing. So one of the other things that I wanted to mention, bring up is this new, this new cellular network security settings page. And this is actually, these actually controls the new anti-stingray protection features that I talked about on a previous episode. So you go to settings, then security and privacy, more security and privacy. I know it's a handful. And then there's a new cellular network security page that lets you toggle security notifications and require encryption. And this is exactly what I talked about, where it allows you to control the setting for where whenever a cellular network you're connected to tries to access your device's unique identifier, you'll receive a notification. And then this require encryption toggle will tell you whether or not a network you're connected to is using a insecure or unencrypted connection. Some other relevant changes is, this one is actually a little fun. There's a new updated predictive back animation. So predictive back gesture was something announced in Android 14 as a developer preview, but it's still not enabled. But now there's this new animation that kind of gives you a better idea of, like, sorry, it's a beta. It's a little buggy, so you can ignore that little crash warning. But like, you can see this animation, like I can kind of see like a peek behind of where I'm going. Previously, it would kind of like quickly glide back to the previous page and you wouldn't exactly see what page you're currently going on. But this animation, I think, is a little better than what it previously was.
Yeah, it doesn't really give you any true information as far as what is there. It just basically confirms that there's something there. Right? Because it's the tiniest of slivers. So really, there's not a whole lot you can do with that other than go, oh yeah, there's something back there, you know, and know that you're cutting to something.
It really feels like literally just to circumvent the case where people exit out of an app by accident.
Yeah, right.
Like literally just
I don't want the home screen to be peeking through. Like maybe it's like a little clue that, you know, you're going a place you don't mean to go.
Oh, dude. I actually did. I tried to pay with my phone yesterday and I am on vanilla ice cream, ice baby. And I just thought it was me not being able to use the machine. I'm also, by the way, if you're on Android 15, and I've been getting tons of crashes trying to open like any kind of search results from like the Google app or any other like deep link. When it opens Chrome, it crashes every single first time. Yeah, it's been a good one, y'all. This is that wonderful feeling of being a beta tester.
Being a beta tester.
Oh, God. Feels great.
All right. And there's a couple other... at least one other change in that's available in the public beta that I wanted to highlight. So if you go to the network details page, there's this privacy button. Previously, when you tapped it, it just opened a little dialogue. Now it opens its own dedicated page that has these options to use randomized MAC address and to use device MAC address. And also a third toggle to send device name. This third toggle is entirely new in beta 1. And this allows you to toggle whether or not to send your device's name to the Wi-Fi network that you're connected to. And that's it for the like actually public-facing features in Android 15 Beta 1. There's a couple of other changes that I wanted to talk about. So The big one is a very early look at lock screen widgets in Android 15, and also confirmation, unfortunately, that this lock screen widget feature is limited to tablets, like the Pixel tablet. So you're not going to get lock screen widgets on your phone or even your foldable, but if you have a Pixel tablet with access to the hub mode, you'll be able to add them to the lock screen. And I'm playing a video here. I recorded a video for Android Authority. It's still in a very unfinished state. Like when I add widgets, as you can see if you're watching the video feed, and then I go back to the lock screen, some of the lock screen UI elements like the clock are still overlaid on top of it. So it's very janky looking, but the functionality is there, and it's something that Google is working on, which is very exciting because we used to have this all the way back with Android 4.2, and then they removed it with Lollipop in late 2014. So it's been almost a decade since we've had lock screen widgets in Android.
What's old is new again.
There it is. Yep. All we need is that that cool honeycomb background, right, Jason? And then we'll be back back to the first. Right. What was that Motorola tablet? The first tablet?
The Zoom. I actually have that downstairs.
I remember.
Motorola Zoom. Yep. And the power supply, which was a proprietary power supply.
I remember that.
That was Zoom with an X, right?
I'll have to boot it up so we can compare.
Yeah, so it was an X with the Zoom. That said, as an owner of a Pixel tablet, I think I want lock screen widgets. I think I do. I definitely spend the tablet more often on the dock here in my office, and I use it as a speaker and that sort of thing. But having the ability to control media or to do something very quickly just from that widget versus actually having to unlock the tablet and doing stuff, I think I would like. So
That would address like the issue that my husband and I had, it where it felt too much like a tablet and not enough like a Nest, like the actual smart home device. So
yeah, it would certainly help. Mm-hmm.
So a couple other things that I wanted to bring up. So as I alluded to earlier, the NFC functionality Android 15 Beta 1 is broken for all users on a Pixel phone. And partially the reason for that is because Google did an oopsie in their migration process from the OS NFC stack to this new unbundled Project Mainline-led NFC stack. So they're working to turn the NFC stack into a Project Mainline module that's updated through a separate module package. And in that process, the OS is still looking at the location of the old NFC system app, and where instead should be looking at the location of the new system app that's in a completely different directory. And because of that, Android throws an error and thinks that NFC is just not available on the device. And that's kind of like one of the big stories here, is that Google's working to make NFC updatable through Google Play, because previously you had to update it with the operating system, which means that you have to rely on carriers to roll out updates, you have to rely on OEMs to roll out updates. But in the future, Google themselves will be able to push out updates directly to all the Android devices, just like they're able to do with a lot of other components, thanks to Project Mainline.
Well, this is the place for it to crash. So, I mean, beta's working.
Yep, right.
As intended.
Yeah, exactly.
One other NFC-related feature that Google is working on is finally introducing support for NFC charging. This is a standard that was actually announced back in May of 2020. And NFC wireless charging is basically just another way to wirelessly charge, but it's significantly slower than Qi wireless charging, up to 1 watt of charging speeds over 2 centimeter distance. Now you might be thinking,
Wait a minute. I love this. It's like, listen, we've got you a new way to wireless charge your device, and it's slower.
And it's horrible.
But is this an answer for lower tier or mid range phones that don't?
No. It's not for phones at all. It's actually, so the thing smaller about Qi wireless charging is sometimes there are certain classes of devices that are just too small to fit a coil big enough that can adequately receive power. That's where NFC wireless charging can come in. It's meant for incredibly tiny devices like individual earbuds, like tracker tags, like styluses. In fact, the USI 2.0 stylus, if you have a Pixel tablet with a USI 2.0 stylus, that standard, the USI 2.0 standard, actually bakes in NFC wireless charging as part of the standard. So what this NFC wireless charging standard enables is you can charge compatible devices via NFC. And hopefully this opens up, you know, like we talked about last week, the launch of the Find My Device network. A lot of those tracker tags have non-replaceable batteries or not even unrechargeable batteries. maybe in the future we could have tracker tags that support NFC wireless charging so that you can just charge them using your phone once a year and you don't have to worry about replacing the battery or plugging in them in with a USB cable.
Yeah,
that would be nice.
Very cool.
Speaking of nice quality of life improvements, Android 15 is also preparing a new screensaver called Home Controls. So this is something I spotted in development actually before Android 15 Beta 1 was released. And this new screensaver basically just shows your Google Home device controls as a screensaver. That's basically it. So if you
do the
open
buttons,
the Google
like,
Home
shift
app, right?
Around on the screen in random ways so there's no burn-in or anything like that?
Good question. I'm pretty sure it does. I haven't tried it. Like I've actually like, you know, I did try it to take these screenshots here to show what it looks like on a phone and a tablet. And I'm sure it does shift around.
Yeah.
But I'm sure if you access the Home Controls button on your Android phone from the lock screen often, you might find this new screensaver, you know,
that'd
really
be nice.
Useful because it's always there whenever you have your phone or your tablet docked. This is not available yet, but this is something that could be coming soon in a future update for Pixel devices.
Is screen burn-in on a small... Allow me to take a slight tangent off into Neverland. Is screen burn-in on mobile devices even still a thing? I remember early on in Android when it was definitely a thing, and there were articles written about it for particular phones and everything. I haven't heard about that in years.
I feel like any screen can get burned in if it's left on long enough.
But our devices, you know, rarely... You know, they almost always have some sort of timeout going, so...
Right, probably. Except when they don't. Right.
Except when they don't, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's also usually not enough static UI elements. Like you're always interacting with something. Something's always changing.
You're always moving
stuff.
So
there's not much opportunity for things to burn in.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Oh, that's why they want edge to edge, so that you the status bar and then I've added not really. No, there's nothing to do with that.
couldn't even finish the joke.
Nah, it's too dumb. I am imagining my husband asked me to turn off the bedroom lights and me having to play Fruit Ninja to get like the switch. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying.
You're like, yeah. Oh, dang it, now it's over there.
Oh, when I just turned the kitchen lights on and now like. Anyway.
How badly do you want that light off in your house?
Not that bad.
All right. Well, Michelle, is there anything else in Android 15 beta?
Yeah, just to wrap things up, a couple of last minor things. There are some new features in the Pixel Launcher that are being prepared, like this new animation for when you go back to the home screen by swiping up. It's very slightly different. It's just springier, faster, and you can see a bit more of the wallpaper zoom effect. Google's also introducing better widget recommendations that are categorized. So, for example, in this image, you can see there's essential, social, and entertainment. There's also... in the recents menu, Google is testing this new title bar where you can see like above the Chrome window, there's a little pill that says Chrome, and then there's a little drop down arrow that you can tap that surfaces.
I like that. Slightly
different compared to what we have right now, which is basically just the icon itself that you kind of have to tap or long press to surface the context menu. Very minor change. And then lastly, earlier today, I published this article on a feature. This is not actually related to beta 1. It's something that's also in previous ones, but it's a feature Google is working on to potentially quarantine misbehaving apps. So right now, Android has the concept of suspending apps, which is what Digital Wellbeing uses whenever you put an app in focus mode or its app timer runs out. And it also has, the focus mode. Yeah, so that's basically what Digital Wellbeing does. And when an app is suspended, its notifications can't be shown, its activities are stopped, and it can't ring the device. And what quarantining an app does is it takes that a bit further. It does the same thing as suspending, but it also makes sure that its services can't be queried by other apps, it can't be bound to or receive broadcasts from other system or other apps, and it can't be resolved. So like it won't show up in intent disambiguation dialog or the open app with the open something, open file with dialog.
That makes sense.
And this is basically... like in between disabling and suspending an app. It's like a more putting an app in a state to where it can't really do anything unless the user explicitly launches it from the launcher. And this is basically, you know, something that a lot of desktop operating systems do. If you've ever dealt with Windows antivirus software, you know, Android doesn't really work the same way as Windows. So you don't really have to actually like quarantine an individual file because of the way Android is built. You know, Android apps are they don't get system level access by default. They're sandboxed and they can only communicate with each other using very well-defined APIs and only if they're granted specific permissions. So this kind of permission, this kind of quarantine capability is just, you know, filling in the gap for features like Play Protect. Like Google Play Protect right now can basically either recommend that you uninstall an app or automatically uninstall an app. It can't do anything in between. So in case like it detects a potentially harmful app but doesn't want to take action, potentially this new quarantine apps feature will allow Play Protect to quarantine an app it thinks is malicious but doesn't want to actually automatically uninstall on your behalf. So this is something that they're working on. I don't think it'll actually launch on Android 15, to be honest, just because it's unfinished. And this settings page that I'm showing, that I'm scrolling over right now if you're watching the video feed, this quarantine apps page was actually removed in recent betas. Like, it popped up first in Android 14 QPR 2 Beta 1 back in November, but it's since been removed. Like, all the code for this quarantine app feature is still there, but nothing is really implementing it right now. And, yeah, that's basically it for everything I've covered in Android 15 from the past week. There is, of course, a whole lot more left to be discovered, a whole lot more in my backlog. So if you want to find out more, stay tuned.
All right. Exciting. Indeed. And if you've installed it, NFC doesn't work.
Yeah.
When can I test that?
Not.
So. I tested it for
not
you.
Installed. I have not.
Oh, maybe I'll, install it on another device. Maybe not my daily driver, but like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I mean, in years past, I'd just throw a caution to the wind and just be like, yeah,
I know.
No,
I
what remember. Better way to learn the ins and outs of this new beta than to live with it on my main device? And
yep. It's just,
I don't do that anymore.
My whole worry about that is the situation when, like you said, we're like, yeah. I'm standing at the turnstile of the New York City subway system like, and trying to scan my phone and NFC's not working and the line is backing up behind me. Like, I don't want to be in a situation where I need to do something and the beta gets in the way.
Yeah.
Shut down.
So, yeah. No. Good.
Oh. All right. Well, cool. Well, that was a ton of stuff, but it wouldn't be a fun episode without talking about some market share numbers. Who's got some?
Oh, I got some. I got some.
The
and they're actually very fun numbers.
See? Yeah.
They're fun numbers. So we very often check in with the International Data Corporation, the IDC, and they release a report called the Worldwide Quarterly Mobile Phone Tracker that has all those wonderfully spicy numbers about who are the top manufacturers in the smartphone world. Well, guess what? There's good news for the smartphone market as a whole, because worldwide shipments of smartphones are up 7.8% in the first quarter of 2024. So over the last couple of years, with everything that's been going on in the world, the smartphone industry definitely has taken a hit in terms of, like, you know, sales and things like that. And of course, a lot of very reasonable reasons that people are, you know, saving their money, not going for expensive phones, et cetera, et cetera. So it looks like the smartphone companies are kind of coming out from underneath the, you know, decline the last few years. And the increase in this Q1 of 2024 is actually the third consecutive quarter of shipment growth. So overall, 289.4 million units have sold in Q1 of 2024. That is an increase of 7.8% over Q4 of 2023. But that's not all. In the spiciest news, at least the spiciest news of 2023 Q4, was that Apple finally dethroned Samsung as the number one smartphone manufacturer in regards to units shipped. Well, guess what? Samsung, not to be outdone, insert Rocky metaphor, movie metaphor here.
Rocky and Bullwinkle? Oh.
No, the other, the punchy one. Eye of the Tiger. Samsung has taken the crown back, and they now have 20.8% market share, in contrast to Apple's 17.3%. And rounding out the top five are, not surprisingly, Xiaomi at 14.1%, Transsion, and if you don't recognize Transsion, they are the owners of increasingly, you know, favorite brand around here, Tecno, that has made all the different foldables and flippables and is, the in fact, the number one smartphone manufacturer in sales in Africa. They're number four at 9.9%, and rounding out is Oppo at 8.7%. So basically all across the board, people are recovering. This doesn't mention Huawei in the top five, but of course we also have had Huawei coming back, in the recent year with various, you know, improvements, in their technology, and all kind of advancements in whatever they're doing, like making a whole new OS. But yeah, so basically the IDC's research director, Nabila Popal, points out that, you know, what they're seeing actually is an increase in the value and average price of these sold units. So basically, people are buying more expensive phones, but probably expecting to keep them longer. As we've seen, you know, a lot of companies are now offering longer and longer support periods and longer, you know, promises of both OS and security updates. And Popal also notes that there is, quote, a shift in power among the top five companies, which will likely continue as market players adjust their strategies in a post-recovery world. So there you go, folks. We're not in recovery. We're post-recovery. Smartphone manufacturers have recovered and are now duking it out for those top spots. So yeah, Xiaomi's got a big recovery after large, you know, declines the last couple years. Transsion is, quote, a stable presence. And Huawei, of course, making a lot of moves. So the very interesting thing, especially for those of us at Android faithful, is that iPhone, of course, had to give up their top spot. And they did that by losing 10%, or rather their sales dropping 10% last quarter. And yeah, I mean, it's significant. That's, it's not, I mean, they're not doomed or anything, but that's a pretty significant
drop.
No, but
that, yeah, that's, I mean, like the 2-3% shuffle that we've seen, mm-hmm. you know, are rounding errors, right? Or yeah. like, it's like a little here, a little there. 10% drop is like, I can't imagine Cupertino.
Yeah.
Conversations are very positive after seeing that.
Yeah, when Samsung and Apple switched places in last year, it was kind of like 20-point-something% to 19-point-something%, right?
It was just, super close.
It was just tiny little shift. It was notable
Apple
because
slightly
yeah,
edged out.
Just slightly Samsung. Edged out, yeah. But I mean, with an overall drop of 3% and their own individual sales dropping by 10%, that's a big deal. And CNN actually talked to Nabila Popal of IDC, and basically they are positing that the main cause of this sharp drop is China. Because, ooh. Quote, nationalism, a rough economy, and increased competition have hurt Apple over the past several months. And that kind of makes a lot of sense, right? And like, I guess, going into other spheres, a lot of Chinese domestic companies are trying to, like, you know, kind of, I guess, take up the mantle where a lot of Western companies have traditionally served China. So that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm.
So it's not RCS being the death knell of Apple.
No, unfortunately not. I think Apple's going to do okay. I think they're going to bounce back from this. But it's still a blow because China is an important market to Apple, only second to the U.S. And also, if you want to just kind of keep the kind of giddy, Android faithful feelings going, finally, IDC did comment that they're expecting Android to grow at twice the pace of iOS. So enjoy that feeling of that
Take
statement
that.
For just a second. Yes. But the proviso to that statement is that because the entire space, because the growth of Android has been in decline for the last couple of years, that means there's a room to grow. So,
it went down so far, it can only go up.
It can
again.
Only go up from here. So
basically
optimism. And yeah, I want to mention this because we can't not get away from AI. But one final thing that Popal kind of mentioned to CNN is that she is noting that Apple doesn't have a strong AI message yet, although maybe whisper, see what they have to say in their June developer conference. But I don't know, you always got
to
mention AI.
AI
yeah, and see what that shakes up. But the top companies are wrestling for whatever market share they can get. And yeah, there are your numbers, folks that like numbers. It's a tug of war, a 5, 10, 8, I guess tug of war really between Samsung and iPhone, and everybody else is fighting for the rest of it. So
glad to hear we're post-recovery. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Yes, declared. Yeah. We're good. It's post-recovery.
Yeah.
Not pre, not.
Not in the middle
not
of
the
it
middle.
Anymore.
We're yeah. post. Yep. So.
I think consumers largely around the world were just waiting to see what these AI pins were going to be all about.
What a future without
smartphones and with wearable AI devices was going to be. And then when they saw the reviews of the Humane AI pin, they said, okay, actually, I think smartphones for at least the next 10 years, let's just continue.
I'm starting to feel bad. As the Humane feedback piles in, I'm just like, oh.
I mean, if they launch it too early, they launch it too early. I don't know what to tell you.
Not much to feel bad
don't
about.
Don't do that.
Yeah. I did feel bad at first, but then I heard about how much money they raised for this whole thing, and then I stopped feeling bad.
Fair enough, yes.
This is like a bit of an off topic, but there are some wild things. Like people are now like clapping back at like people like Marquez and MKBHD for not being responsible or doing no harm with their reviews. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
I think that's ridiculous.
That's what tech reviewers do. They review tech and they got to be honest with their opinion. So anyway, yes, it's all ridiculous and I do feel bad for Humane, but as you said, Jason, don't do that. Don't release the product too early.
Yep.
Anyway. There you
go. I'm pretty certain that wasn't the reason for the IDC report, just to clarify. Just having a little fun. Well, you were talking a lot about OnePlus and Oppo, and I've got some news here. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but Oppo and OnePlus are apparently getting in on the AI game. Like, we already knew that they were doing this earlier. I think in the last week or two, or maybe in the last month, OnePlus had released its first AI feature, AI Eraser. But now there was an announcement that was a little bit bumpy, to say the least, that Oppo and OnePlus were getting in on Gemini with Google. The original press release said that they would be the first company to bring Google's most powerful version of Gemini, that would be 1.0 Ultra, to its phones this year. But that is actually not the case. They later issued a statement to clarify that that is not happening. They were mistaken. They are bringing a Gemini model to the phone.
Gemini
but
model.
Not the most powerful one, the first smartphone to bring the most powerful one. You know, that would have been pretty big news if that was going to Oppo and OnePlus. I thought it was kind of strange when I read it the first time, too. I was like, wow, Google's getting really cozy with OnePlus right now. That's interesting.
So is this a reset to that's been X number of days since OnePlus has had a marketing mishap? Or?
Oh, dear.
I mean, I guess you could.
I thought we were past those days.
Yeah. You know what? Every company puts their foot in their mouth at some point. OnePlus is not perfect, as we are reminded. This release, though, the Gemini, not the 1.0 Ultra version of Gemini, will happen sometime later this year. They plan to release more than 100 AI features in the next 5 years. No availability or supported phone list was announced for this, so there's that. OnePlus getting in on the generative AI with Gemini here pretty soon. But not the best Gemini. It's important.
AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And real quick on that tip, Samsung also announced, we had talked on the show how they had opened up Galaxy AI to the previous generation of S series phones and, you know, the foldables and tablet. And now they've gone back another generation. So they announced yesterday the S22 series, the Z Fold 4, Z Flip 4, and the Galaxy Tab S8 series, all getting it. So there you go. More devices getting the Galaxy AI.
Manufacturers are just AI crazy right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I keep referring to it as the year of AI. 2024 is like the year of AI in smartphones.
I mean, it's funny because, like, I feel like
everybody's got to have their play. You know?
Like last year was the year of AI because, like, as an emergent, right? And this year, I think you're right, is the year of AI in smartphones, or it could be argued the year AI broke. You know, similar to the year punk broke, you know, like when
you say broke, you mean broke out
broke
or
broke out, you know, yeah, like not broke, a little humane, there you go, but broke in terms of, like, you know, reaching a massive audience and really going super, super mainstream.
So, yeah. If you like Galaxy AI, by the way, I did a video on it earlier today. After spending a couple of months with the Galaxy AI on the S24 Ultra. So,
and if you're watching our video show right now, you can see Jason paused his video on YouTube at a very inopportune moment.
Yeah, here, I'll go ahead and hit play. Is that better?
Yeah,
that's... Do you like that more, Ron?
A little more look than the closed eye in-between word.
Let me tell you, as the person who edits all my videos, there is no good paused screenshot of me. It always looks awkward, there you go.
And where can people find that video, Jason?
Yeah, Yellow Gold Studios. Just go to YouTube and search for Yellow Gold Studios.
Cool. Right on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now is the time, my favorite part of the show. As I mentioned earlier when we started the show, we love our patrons. We love everybody who supports us over at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. And every week, those loyal patrons get to vote on a story for us to talk about on the show. We do a fun post up on Patreon where we include a little bug droid that was designed by one of the listeners using AI. And this week we want to thank William Steele for giving us a cute little bug droid having his morning coffee while reading a newspaper, presumably of Android news.
Yeah, reading an issue of Nsippis.
I love
how... Ilves.
I love how AI cannot do words. It's very funny. If you tell it explicitly what words, it can do it sometimes. But yeah. But very cool. Yay, bug droid reading the morning news.
Got eyes on its legs.
Oh, those were knees. I thought maybe that bug droid finally got knees and could articulate its legs.
Oh, okay. Okay, maybe.
But they're on the sides. Never mind.
A little weird. But that's okay.
It's all good.
Awesome nonetheless.
But yeah, do love the bug droid art. By the way, we're running low. So if you're listening and you're into making AI art, make a bug droid reading Android news or doing something with Android news, email it to us at contact@androidfaithful.com because the more you send in, the less work I have to do, because I could do too, but I'd rather highlight what you guys do. This is a fun little thing. All right, so this week we had three stories that were up for voting. The first one, I'll go from the bottom up. 29% of the vote went to a review of Carsify, a simple wireless Android Auto device. That got 29% of the vote. 34% of the vote went to instant translation with Circle to Search is now widely available. But the winner, and it was very close between a Circle to Search story and this one, the fact that Google Messages prep single line text field redesign after all of your complaints up on 9to5 Google. Interesting story here written by Abner Lee over at 9to5 Google. Basically, if you might remember, Google Messages did a tweak to the input box where they added a second line with shortcuts for emojis and images and attachments and things like that. And when you tapped into the message, it expanded and was very kind of bulky. And I remember when it rolled out, I was like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Well, apparently many of you agreed with me and complained, and Google listened. So soon those buttons are going to integrate back into a single line format, the way things were before they switched to the two line format, which is great to hear and great to see, and makes me ask, can we all now unify around them bringing back the inbox organization between spam, business emails, business texts and personal texts? Because I still don't know why they removed that from Google Messages and I want it back. And so listen, if everybody listen to Android Faithful, if we all complain to Google, maybe they'll listen and make that change again.
Could be. I forgot Google about that
again.
Feature.
Ron is asking Google once again for his categorized inbox.
I was just scrolling through Google Messages the other day trying to find a text message, and I have so much crap. Give me some way to organize them. Like, it was such an elegant solution. Who else is using Google Messages? Am I the only one?
I use Google Messages.
I use it for a couple people.
Michelle does.
Yeah.
How did you guys feel about the two line redesign when it rolled out? Were you like, oh, that's weird, I like it, or were you on the side of the complaints?
I'd never had a strong opinion on it, but I do agree the single line, you know, text field looks much better.
Yeah.
It doesn't. I mean, the two line thing, I guess, would make sense if all of this space was used for something, but it's not. It's just like, let's move it down a line and then keep it blank. At least on the one line thing, it's integrated, and I don't know, that frees up a little more space up top.
And it doesn't take away the conversation too, because that second line lets you see less conversation above without having to scroll. So I don't know.
I'm sympathetic to it, but I worked at a company where we did a lot of, like, you know, message bars and stuff, and it gets difficult to put stuff and where it doesn't get in the way.
I'm sure.
Well, the other challenge here is that on the screenshot example we were looking at, that's someone using Gboard, which I use Gboard, and you've got duplicative buttons,
That's true. It's unnecessary.
On the screenshots, I have three places to tap to get emojis. Right. There's emoji button in the text field box. There's the emoji button at the top of the keyboard, and there's emoji button to the left of the space bar. Right. There's three places to get. Listen, I love emojis, but like,
and if you loved emojis, then you'd have a fourth place.
Exactly. If I really loved emojis, I'd have like a chat bubble emoji thing going there. and now that's understanding that this is, you might not use Gboard. You might use a different keyboard that doesn't have, so you want to have the emoji access and that sort of thing. But still, I don't know. It got a little cluttered for my tastes. So,
yeah.
Right. Hey, they listened.
They listened. Which is great. Sometimes we don't know if they're listening or not. But I'll tell you who else is listening, our fantastic patrons. And I want to thank a bunch of our patrons for supporting the show. Brian Hellman, Noah Donovan, longtime listener, Jason, going back to All About Android, Lori Helms, who we've known Lori for so long. She's fantastic. Thank you for your support, Lori. Matt Buonaconti. I love your last name, Matt. You're Paisan. Matt Buonaconti.
Yeah, Matt.
And and Daniel Curiel.
By the way, y'all, you're getting a standing ovation from Jason if you're audio only. Like, Jason is so tall.
Which,
and
I was going to say, if you watch the video, you can see how tall Jason actually is when he's standing. He's very tall. But Brian Hellman, Noah Donovan, Lori Helms, Matt Buonaconti, and Danielle Curiel, thank you for your support over at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. You're all the best. Thanks so much.
You are the best.
Ron, when you were out last week, I did feel remiss that I wanted to make the joke that Francisco Federico is still dead, and Ron probably still doesn't have Circle to Search. And then Perfect Attendance Clinton Woodward did ask an important question. Ron, do you have Circle to Search yet?
Still no Circle to Search.
Jeez. All right, so...
I know.
Wait, is it Francisco Franco? Wait, I always miss.
Francisco Franco?
Francisco Franco.
Francisco Franco. Yeah,
Francisco Franco's still dead, and Ron still doesn't have Circle of
Correct.
Search.
Yep.
So. All right, sorry.
All right, well, there you go.
I have it, though. I don't know how. I wasn't supposed to get it, but now I do.
yeah.
Sorry, not to rub salt in the wound.
It's all right. I mean, clearly something is wacky. Something happened. I need to wipe my device and start again if I truly want it. I don't need it that badly. So
I don't want it anymore.
I don't want it. So. All right. Well, we're running along. That's it for the news. So now let's go into hardware.
Yes, let's go into hardware after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Okay, let's go into hardware.
Yes, we should.
The first thing we can go in with hardware is some lovely information from Kamila Wojciechowska. Oh my gosh, Kamila, I was practicing before the show and I just totally just like crashed and burned right there. I even had notes on how to pronounce your last name. Sorry. So Kamila Wojciechowska has reported on a couple of interesting things. One is that the Google Pixel 9 series is probably going to get satellite connectivity, and that is thanks to a new modem chip, the Samsung Modem 5400. There's a lot of interesting background story about, you know, what's up with the Tensor Chips modems, which were Qualcomm, but then switched to Exynos modems. And then insert, you know, many references to the many connectivity problems that people have had with Pixel over the years. But yeah, this is a new modem and it will support 3GPP RAL 17, which is the standard for 5G, which introduces support for satellite connectivity. And so satellite connectivity will hit the Pixel 9 series, including the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. Wait, what did I just call the next gen fold? That's not a lead into the next story we're going to talk about. But the satellite connectivity will also possibly be coming to an under development 5G tablet nicknamed Clementine. But yeah, so the next chip, the next Tensor chip, the G4, is going to be bringing to you a modem with satellite connectivity. So there you go.
Very nice. Very nice.
And yeah, what did I call the next-gen Pixel Fold?
What did you call it?
I called it the Pixel...
What would you call it?
Well, it could be called the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. And so in other rumors, it could be that Google is looking to kind of realign the naming of the Pixel ecosystem, the Pixel family of devices. And instead of being the Pixel Fold 2, we're looking at the Pixel 9 Pro Fold, would, I guess, place it as a properly premium device, just of a different form factor. And it looks like the lineup could be, if rumors are true, the Pixel 9, the Pixel 9 Pro, the Pixel 9 Pro XL, and the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. So we'll have to see.
Why not the Pixel 9 Pro XL Fold? Seriously.
Oh, God.
Here's the thing. Google, you need to release seven more folds in between the Pixel Fold and the Pixel 9 Pro Fold to maintain the numbering, because you haven't had 9 foldables. This is like the year Samsung jumped numbers. Do you remember that, Jason?
Yeah.
What year was that? When the Galaxy series, when they
jumped
the S10 to S20?
Yeah, that's it was right. S10 to S20. Yeah, because they wanted to align with the years, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, but I mean, at the same time, though, I can understand the other side of it too. If this is part of the Pixel 9 family,
sure, yeah,
then you know that doesn't necessarily mean that there were 9 folds.
No, I kid. There should be. Well, we would need 7 more folds because we have the first fold, and this would be the 9th.
Yeah,
right. So we need 7 more folds. So you don't need to sell a lot of them. Just make 7 different folds. Pretend like you did. Just do do revisionist history.
They did behind closed doors at Google. Yeah. So.
I mean, the interesting thing about name basically implies that this could launch alongside the rest of the Pixel 9 series in the fall
versus, and get updates like everybody else does.
Yeah,
that's another thing, because the first gen Pixel Fold launched out of cycle with the rest of the Pixel 8 series and pretty much got shafted on so many features. Like, so many features are available on the Pixel 8 and the 8 Pro, but not the Pixel Fold, which is considerably more expensive.
Wasn't Circle to Search one of them?
It was.
Circle to Search was initially one of them.
Gemini Nano
is another one of them.
Yeah.
There's a couple of others. And hopefully that won't be the case for the Pixel 9 Pro Fold, because it'll be launching alongside the other Pixel 9 series and it'll pack the same Tensor G4 chip.
Do you think we'll see these phones at Google I.O.? No, I don't think, actually.
Probably not.
No.
So do we hate the naming scheme? Do we understand it? Do we like it?
It makes sense to me. It's a mouthful, but it makes sense to line it all up.
It does make sense. I think having the whole lineup, but then we were talking, I think it was 2 weeks ago, when we were talking about adding the third phone to the Pixel line, like getting rid of the 8A or the 9A and making it, that sort of thing. So now you're going to add a fourth, and if they all come at the same time, like, this goes back to the release schedules. Having four phones out at the same time going to be hard for the audience, for the consumer base to grasp, and which one do you choose and all that sort of, I don't know, it seems risky.
Samsung. Apple does it every year.
Yeah, Apple does it. Samsung does it. Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yep. Time will tell. We'll see.
I mean, it really is just, though, a theme in smartphones that, they have the 4, 5, 6 names in the name of the smartphone. Oh, and it's
actually
silly,
speaking of which, there was one little tidbit in the article on the satellite connectivity that you missed, Wynn. It's that Camilla brought up that there's going to be a 5G-enabled tablet. Clinton in our chat just asked, what's the next tablet called? And that's a good question. We don't know what it'll be called. But we know there's going to be a 5G tablet.
I didn't go to detail. I thought I did mention it. Did I not say that? It's literally in my note. Okay, never mind. But yes, it's nicknamed Clementine.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned Clementine.
Okay.
Because I remember going, oh, my darling, right after you said it.
I was thinking Clementines are delicious. by the way, just real quick, another quick diversion, because we're running on time, we're running over again, and of course, we don't need more diversions. But the code names for the 9 Pro, 9 Pro XL, 9 Pro Fold are Toke, Cayman, Komodo, and Comet. Toke is a gecko. Cayman is like an alligator-like thing. Komodo, dragon. I couldn't figure out what Comet was. And it makes me like foil hat, like, oh, this must have been like a last-minute marketing decision, because the code name doesn't match the other things. And someone's going to tell me that a comet lizard is, or a comet gecko is like a really famous thing.
I just did a quick search on Google, and Dragonvale Wiki has Comet Dragon. I don't know.
I don't think that's a thing.
It's adorable, though. It's totally adorable.
It is adorable. It's a really cute dragon.
It's a cute dragon.
It is adorable.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, what else do we have in hardware? Michelle.
Some Sony stuff.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we allegedly have a new flagship phone in the Xperia line called the Sony Xperia 1 Mark 6. I think that's how they call it in their lineup. And yeah, this is going to be their top tier flagship, ultra premium. I'm sure it's over $1,000 because I think the previous phones in the Sony Xperia 1 line were also over $1,000. And one interesting thing potentially about this phone is, so what we have here are renders from reputable leaker on leaks shared with Android Headlines. We have 3D renders of the phone, but what we don't have are the exact dimensions. So kind of like the Android Headlines article kind of speculates that this might be the wider phone that's been rumored for a while. So for those of you who don't know, the Sony Xperia 1 line is kind of famous for having a super tall 21:9 aspect ratio, as well as a 4K, a true 4K resolution display. And it looks like, according to rumors, that this aspect ratio might be cut down and the phone might be a bit wider. It might be a 19:5:9 aspect ratio and a 2K resolution display. So kind of more in line with other flagship phones from other brands. That's interesting because Sony has kind of been the oddball in their aspect ratio and their resolution choice, mostly because they wanted to target like a pro camera enthusiast market. Like they wanted you to buy this phone and not only use it as a pro camera, but also use it as an accessory for your thousands of dollars worth of Sony camera equipment, you know, because you had the ability to actually use your Sony Xperia flagship as a input monitor for your camera. So you could use it as a display. And that's one of the unique features of it. And having that 4K resolution display kind of really helped with that because you could record and actually see the native resolution from your camera output. But going down to 2K kind of reduces that benefit, but also makes a lot more sense from an actual smartphone usability perspective because almost nothing you're doing on your phone, on your smartphone requires 4K resolution on such a tiny display, right?
Right, right.
Like you're not going to notice the difference in the pixel density.
But at a certain point, it's wasted. Yeah, it's wasted energy. It's wasted battery. It's for very, very little. It's
very diminishing return.
Perceivable gain.
What's the ROI there, really?
Yeah.
Most
and it needs to be sharper.
Yeah, we don't have any other specs. I mean, but we can assume it's going to have, you know, actually we can see in the photos it's going to have a triple rear camera. It's probably going to have some pretty insane camera hardware. And it looks like it'll all still have a headphone jack because Sony is, you know, pretty keen on keeping that feature around. And a dedicated camera shutter button. And we'll likely also have Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Gen 3, just to guess. And, you know, 120 hertz OLED, you know, yada, yada, the typical premium top tier flagship specs of 2024. And probably a very high price tag to boot.
Yeah. Looks nice. Samsung being very courageous with that port, that headphone port. Very courageous.
Sony. Someone out there still holding on.
Sorry, Sony, yeah. Sony.
Still holding on, Mateo. I know you out there. All right, cool. And last but not least, I feel like over the past couple of weeks, we've been talking a lot about Motorola and the upcoming Edge series. Well, they've rolled out the three new phones in that series, the Edge 50 Ultra, the Edge 50 Pro, and the Edge 50 Fusion. And this is where it just gets, this is just the greatest thing ever. Thank you, Jason. Jason, a little behind the scenes, Jason assigned the stories, like we identify what we're going to talk about. And Jason knew that this was right up my alley because the Edge 50 Ultra, is the flagship of this line. And for the back panel of the phone, you have a vegan leather option, which we've seen in the past, or real wood.
Yes.
Wood. Yes. Like wood, like actual, like what my desk is made of, what your house is, like a wood back panel.
You're camping and you've run out of firewood, you've got a phone. Just throw that in there.
This is just fantastic. So it's running on a Snapdragon 8S Gen 3 chipset. It's got a 6.7-inch OLED display with a Pantone validation and a wood back, in case I didn't mention that. It's got IP68 water resistance. Is the wood IP68 water resistant? Because I want to know how they did that. Is there there a lacquer? Like, what does that work? It's got wireless charging through the wood, apparently, which is amazing. I didn't know wireless charging worked through wood. And it's got a triple camera setup with a 50 megapixel main, 64 megapixel telephoto, and 50 megapixel ultra wide macro. Going down the line, the Edge 50 Pro is the mid-range option, running a Snapdragon 7 Gen 3 chip with an IP68 rating, wireless charging, and it's got an additional 10 megapixel telephoto camera compared to the Fusion model. And the Edge 50 Fusion has no wireless charging, shares the IP68 with the other models. All three phones have AI, of course. So they've got Google's Magic Editor in Photos with limited free edits and things like that, those features. And Motorola plans to launch these phones outside the U.S., but they do plan to possibly bring all three to the U.S. later this year. And Motorola, if you're listening, I want the wood phone. I want it. I need to know how this works.
I'll take one.
Yes. So I hope it comes to the U.S. because I would like it to work through it with his wood back.
I'll remember.
I just want to say, I actually added the story, was it this morning, I think, right before Jason actually went through the stories, and I was really excited. I saw it. I was like up at 6:30 because I'm still jet lagged, and I'm like, going in the trailer board.
Wood back.
This I want one. I will buy one.
2014.
Yep, I remember
the
this.
New retro, how Motorola brought wood back, literally.
What this tells me is that there is someone in the product department at Motorola who really wants to make wood back phones work, right? And like, and 2014, he had a shot, didn't work. They gave him 10 years or him
they're
or
like,
her.
All right.
And they're like, okay, we'll do it again. Come on.
If you're still around, Fred, we promise 10 years from now, if you're still around, you'll get your shot with the wood phone again. Okay.
I love it. Fred at Motorola is really,
Thank
really
you,
excited. So yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's going
to
wrap up.
We just have to be able to put AI in it. Can we do AI in
a wood
phone?
Can put anything in wood, by the way. Wireless charging, AI, it's got it all. Don't put a headphone jack, though. No headphone jack in the wood. We can't cut a hole in the wood for that. So. All right, that's going to wrap up for hardware. Going out on a bang with a wood background, with a wood-backed phone.
Yeah.
But we got a couple of things in apps, right, Jason?
Yeah, speaking of AI, super special Google Photos AI features coming to everyone starting May 15th. No subscription required with an asterisk. It's not like 100% completely free and clear. For example, if you're a non-Pixel user, you get 10 free Magic Editor saves per month. Again, this is a very common kind of thing that we're seeing in a lot of AI tools and stuff is that they give you the small amount for free, but if you want more than that, you have to pay the subscription. So Google's kind of doing it here. But it's Magic Eraser, Photo Unblur, Portrait Light included. The Magic Editor tool is expanding from the Pixel 8 and the 8 Pro to all Pixel devices. All of them? I don't know. Maybe I wrote that down wrong. I'd be surprised. But I guess maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe like the last couple? I don't know. I feel like I missed a detail there. Non-Pixel users, I already said, get only the 10 free Magic Editor saves per month. Pixel users on Google One Premium subscription get unlimited saves. Actually, let me rephrase that. Pixel users and Google One Premium subscribers get unlimited saves. So they get kind of like an unlimited approach because, well, you bought a Pixel. And that's what they want, or the subscription. So that's coming starting May 15th. AI photo features coming to you.
So I'm a double whammy there because I'm both a Pixel owner and a Google One subscriber. So
you get double unlimited.
Double unlimited.
Yeah, you get unlimited. Unlimited.
My Pixel tablet just gave me a search result about Google One. I did not say OKG, by the way.
It thought it heard something.
Yeah. You know what you should do, Ron, is ask her, though, whether your Google One will have VPN on it.
I know the answer to that. So.
Well, the answer is no, because Google One VPN is being discontinued. I liked Jason's notes on this, because he wrote in his notes, Google One VPN is about to die a painful googly death, and is that not the thing? But we can't really blame Google or any kind of weird business directions or pivots or anything. They basically told all the folks that love VPN, well, you know what? You didn't love it enough. You didn't use it enough.
This is on you.
I was going to say, I am a Google users. One customer, focus group of one. Ask me how many times I use VPN by Google One.
How many times have you used it?
How many?
Google zero.
Zero.
Ask me if I knew Google VPN was part of Google One.
Did you?
Had no idea. Oh, okay. Didn't really need VPN. I understand if VPN is important to you, that this would be a nice perk, but there are so many other VPN options out there that probably do it better than what they're doing. And if they didn't have the users to justify the maintenance of it, then, you know, because VPN is all about what? Security. And you need to keep, you need to be on top of that stuff. You need to keep, you know, making sure it's updated and doing all that stuff. And if there's not enough users doing it, then, you know.
So, yeah, and it's, I think it's also got cannibalized by the fact that there's the free Pixel VPN, and I'm also a Google One user, but I'm also now a Pixel user, so cannibalizing users.
Yep.
So
yeah, now, that's a little confusing.
It is a little confusing. Yeah. It's a little confusing, and so...
And that's not going anywhere, right?
Presumably not. One. No changes at all. No changes. For now.
For now.
It is interesting, though, because I feel like most of the time with VPN, I mean, what do you usually think of as a normal like consumer person? You think of NordVPN. You think of all the things that you hear about on your other podcasts. Not this one, but other podcasts Nord and other
Express,
YouTube watching. NordVPN. Yeah. So anyway, it was first introduced in October 2020. It was kind of expensive at first at $10 per month for premium plan, but then they brought it down to $199. Was that Google
it's
One?
Just, it's just tied to Google One in general.
It was Google One. Okay, right. Never mind. I don't know what that note was in my head. Part of Google. But anyway, it's going away for good in the next few months, but I don't know. If you're going by your data set of two, you won't notice because you have other options.
Couple folks in our live chat, Matthew said he has Google One, never even knew about a VPN.
Three,
Morbius65 and Twitch said I used the Google VPN probably a dozen times.
Okay.
Willie's saying that you do. Willie Scott says he does use it when traveling.
Yep. The Google, that's the VPN Google Fi. Yeah, again, that's, you know, you got a lot of VPNs floating around Google between Fi.
Yeah, that's true. It's like three different avenues for VPN within Google. So
well, then you can't really blame Google for basically just continuing this feature and then allowing them to refocus the resources used to make.
Here's my question though: we're losing Google VPN. Does that mean my Google One subscription is getting cheaper?
No, I does not. Doubt it.
So
that doesn't happen.
But if you're a Pixel user, at least so that built-in Pixel VPN that launched with the Pixel 8, that's remaining. But also, it's going to be expanding to the Pixel 7 series, and I think the Pixel Fold as well, with the next Pixel feature drop, which is in June. So that's one thing to look forward to if you have a current Pixel device.
Cool. I don't even know that I've used the included Pixel VPN.
I have NordVPN because I guess I like wasting money, but I also like NordVPN.
I know, right? Like I have Express and
Express Proton has a good VPN, right? And,
yeah, I like the NordVPN interface.
Maybe I don't need it.
So
I don't know.
But then I'd get rid of Express, and then I'd use the Google One on the Pixel, and then 2 months later, Google would kill it, and then I'm right back to Express again.
I think this is definitely a Google's problem thing. I know that they're putting it on us for not using it, but I think we can still put it back on them for just not having.
It's kind of confusing.
It was just positioned badly.
Like it should have been its own separate service called just Google VPN, and then you could get access to it by subscribing to Google One.
Right.
Versus obviously, like we saw right now, right? People didn't even know you had access to this as a part of your Google One plan because it was just within the Google One app.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
VPN mysteries.
Anyway. Yes.
Mysteries.
Send us your VPN thoughts and mysteries at contact@androidfaithful.com. Then during this segment of the show, we might read it next week. Not this week because we haven't gotten your email yet. But we have gotten some emails that we're going to read this week, including this one from Steven, who wrote in to say in episodes 37 and 38, possibly in 39, that I've not yet listened to. Maybe you have now while you're hearing me read this out loud. Anyways, it's getting really weird. You've discussed how to be on a phone call and stay on the navigation screen of Google Maps. I have two words for you. Driving mode. If you launch your drive using driving mode, calls work as you've said you wanted them to. You can talk to Google Assistant hands-free to make a call, send a text, play a received text or start an app like Pocket Casts. Sometimes I want to say Packet Casts. All the while, the map stays front and center just as you would want. You can start driving mode a couple of ways. Here, let me skip forward. That I know of, but of course, there may be others. OKG, start driving mode, is pretty easy. There's a maps widget for driving mode that you can place on your home screen, which you tap when you get in the car and place your phone in its car mount.
This is the way I do, but frankly, after describing method one, I'm not sure why I do it this way. Muscle memory? For the record, I am using a Pixel 7 Pro. Love the show. Glad to see it has been reborn. I wasn't aware of it until this January, so I've been catching a past episode or two when my listening queue gets short. I love that people go back in time and listen to like outdated news because they enjoy listening to us. Like that's that great. Says something about this show.
That's why we love our audience.
So. Absolutely. Thank you for sending that in, Stephen from Ajax, Ontario.
So this was the question from back when Juan was on the show about how to use Google Maps while driving and that sort of thing. And when we got this email, I'm like, oh, driving mode. Like I knew that like sometimes the most obvious answer escapes you in the moment. So that's why everyone listening, I'm glad they chip in when needed. So
indeed.
Yeah. Isn't driving mode today, is driving mode shutting down?
No, that was assistant mode.
Assistant driving,
driving okay, mode, are they different?
That's not confusing. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I no confusing.
Google Maps, yeah. Yeah, it is really confusing. I was just thinking about it for a second, but like...
Are they the same exactly. or are they different?
Wait.
There or was an assistant driving mode that was accessed within Google Maps, and most of that functionality is shutting down. So like all there's going to be is a little bar at the bottom with just your music, I think, and then just the navigation.
But given that it started, sorry, my bad, I'm not trying to like make it confusing, but given that, Stefan said that you could use it doing OKG, that's not Google Assistant. Sorry, that's not Google Assistant.
Right, that is Google Assistant. You're right. He might be referring to the stuff that's going away and hasn't realized it's going away, which would be...
My understanding is that there is a driving mode, and that is the Google Assistant driving mode, and that is officially shutting down as of the news reported on January 31st, 2024.
Right.
So that might work for you now. It might not work for you much longer.
It's saying it's shut down in February, so if it's still working, it's working.
Okay, then
it's still
working. Different.
Okay, yeah.
It's the app launcher. That's gone away. So previously, I can like share this little image in our chat so that you can open it and show it on stream, Jason.
Okay.
So I just shared it in the chat. Open up that image.
Okay, gotcha. Hold on.
It's that screen that's going away. So this app launcher.
Oh, yeah, that's gone.
That's gone.
The screen for audio listeners, the screen that if you were in driving mode, there was a way to see like all of your apps and they were enlarged versions of the icons to make it easier for you to tap while you're driving. That is definitely gone.
Yeah, that went
away.
That's not what the
email is talking about, though, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But that was part of the assistant driving mode experience.
Got it.
They were talking about.
Right. Which I rarely ever used those icons.
Hang on.
So I didn't miss those.
So there's a maps widget. Hang on. I'm going to try this live right now. I'm sorry. All right. So widgets, and I'm going to go down to maps.
Here, we'll go ahead and put the camera.
There are
just
two widgets for maps. Nearby traffic, search, and then there is a driving mode widget. Let me drop it on my screen, and let me adjust my brightness so you can all see it. I should have had my second camera rig up, but that is driving. You see there it says driving?
A little button.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Let me see if I can adjust
that. I saw the little button.
There you go. It says driving.
Okay.
And when I tap that...
Be sure it doesn't show your address.
It gives me a different mode of Google Maps.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. So just to clarify, one of the stories, which was by Andrew Police, that I'm sure that we covered about Google Assistant driving mode being killed, was updated on February 1st by a friend of the show, Will Saddleberg. Google reached out to us, Android Police, to claim that actually Assistant driving mode isn't dead. It's just being, and we covered this too, reduced down to a media playback bar and a shortcut.
Yep.
So we're all just confused. It's not dead. And you can use it to navigate and take calls. Thank you very much, Steven.
So driving mode, viva driving mode, it viva lives. Long live driving mode.
That was a journey right there.
It was a journey.
Thank you. I do remember actually talking about this story too, the one that you just read from Android
Police. I don't think we caught
that.
Hey,
look, folks, we talk about a lot of newsy things here, and sometimes they just kind of fall through the cracks. It's hard to keep track of it all.
It's not like they make it easy for us too.
Well,
so,
and then Will in Will Fashion, is that Will article? Will in Will Fashion had another article saying Google says assistant driving mode isn't dying, but it sure seems dead to us. Will,
I love Will.
Love you, guy.
All right, on to the next email.
All right,
and
Michelle,
our next email comes from Mike Reif in Ohio, who wrote right in to tell us that they bought a used TixWatch. Sorry, I'm really struggling right now. They bought a used TixWatch E3 off of Swappa for $50 just to try a smartwatch. It runs Wear OS 3. They loved it so much they picked up a new in-the-box Pixel Watch 2 off of eBay. It says, I love it, but can I find out how to change the ringtone that plays when I get a call on my Google Pixel 6a? Can it be changed? P.S. For Ron, I have circle of search on my 6a. Congrats. Mike Reif in Ohio. So this is actually something I was looking up right before this. That's why I was kind of like scrambling. And just to quickly show you, yes, you can change the ringtone on your Wear OS watch. The available ringtones will differ, and I'll show you right. Whoa, that was interesting. I meant to do. There we go. So on my OnePlus Watch 2, hopefully I can show you here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to settings. Please. A little laggy right now, but I'm going to go to settings. Is this working? Yeah. Settings.
Yeah. A little blurry, but we can see what you're doing. It's okay.
Then sounds and vibration. Then all the way at the bottom, there's a ringtone section. And here you should be able to change the available ringtone on your device. And I checked the support page, and also there are some articles and stuff that mentioned on the TixWatch, at least on Wear OS 2 before the Wear OS 3 update, you should be able to change the ringtone. So one thing to note, though, is that the available ringtone options are predetermined. Like, you can't customize your ringtone in Wear OS. If you want to do that, you'll unfortunately have to, like, get familiar and comfortable with ADB. You have to, like, push whatever ringtone you want to a specific folder. Then you have to manually change the setting that, you know, controls what the actual ringtone is set as. But if you want to just change the default ringtone to one of the preloaded options, you can do that in Wear OS settings by going through the sound and vibration settings that I just showed on my... This is a OnePlus Watch 2, but most Wear OS watches should allow you to do the same.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be the old person tonight. In sound and vibration, I'm wearing my Pixel 2 watch. By the way, I've been converted to wearables. I really love this Pixel 2 watch. I really liked it. So now whenever someone asks if someone wears wearables, I do. Sorry. So on the Pixel 2 watch, I see sound and vibration as two different settings. I can't.
Okay.
But, and I don't.
I mean, don't try to show
this
it.
This is a Wear OS thing. It's like every smartwatch has like a different version of Wear OS because they're all customized a lot. So
okay, so maybe my exact menu having the same issue
will be different on every watch, but it should be somewhere in there. There's not that many settings.
I'm on the Pixel 2 watch. I'm going to settings.
Okay.
And then I'm going to sound.
Yeah,
because sound and vibration are two separate sections.
Yeah, that's what I see.
Should
and
be
then
sound.
Scrolling all the way down to the bottom.
Yep.
And I see nothing.
I see nothing as well. Yeah. I think that's the problem that Mike, Ron, and I are all having is we cannot find it.
The OnePlus Watch 2 does have. That's what you were pulling it from, Michelle, right? Because I found mine.
Okay.
As well.
So you might have to get a little comfortable with ADB then. I have a Pixel Watch 2. I don't use it as my daily, but I'll figure out. I'll test maybe right after the show to see if you can change the ringtone.
Well, according to Google's own Google
support
Help
page.
Site,
yeah,
it says, in Wear OS by Google Help, to change the watch's ringtone, settings, tap sounds and vibration, where to tap sound or sound and notifications, and then watch ringtone. But that is not, so maybe it's under notifications.
But that says where to.
Sound vibration.
It's where to, right. Did they not include it in Wear OS 3?
No, I don't know if this is saying like you should find it under sounds of vibration, but if you're on Wear 2, you'd find it under sound or sound.
I think you're right, Jason.
Yeah.
It is interesting that it's not there on your Pixel Watch 2.
Yeah.
Maybe Google just decided it wasn't worth letting people change the ringtone.
Well,
That's wild. So it is not available on the Pixel Watch 2, but it's available on the OnePlus Watch 2.
And even then, on the OnePlus Watch 2, you can't use a fully custom ringtone. You can only use whatever. I mean, to be fair, the list is pretty big, but you can only use
list is pretty big.
OnePlus provided.
Good Lord.
I cannot believe it's not there.
Yeah.
Well, and the support documents just make it very confusing.
Yes.
Like, that's.
I thought this was going to be a slam dunk because it's right there in the support doc, right? It was like, oh, here you go. You know, like, let me Google that for you.
Okay, I don't feel so bad about being the old person. Like, excuse me, guys. No. I don't actually see that.
That's wild. Okay.
All right, Mike. Pixel Watch 2 crew. Sound ringtone unchanged crew.
Good,
I don't know.
Good luck, Mike.
Good luck to all of us. Godspeed to all of us, I guess.
I don't believe it. I don't believe you can. Anyway, let's go to the next email, but I still can't believe it.
Okay. Well, just to round things out, we are going to talk about phones and travel once again with John in Cincinnati. But John was not in Cincinnati. John is writing to us about his travels in France. Hello, all. I just returned from a trip to Paris, France, and here are some small things I noticed about tech in 2024. Number one, my wife looks for fashion, and I look at what phone people are using. I say a majority of Android and some Z Fold. I'm a 5 user. Phones as well. iOS has a strong showing, but to me, it looks like Android takes the day so far in France. Number two, it's high time to stop calling LLMs AI. I use ChatGPT and Gemini to help find the best route to a train station from my hotel. Luckily, I did this the day before I had to go. I tried the route. Come to find out the route that was AI suggested had a closed track section. If I depended on the so-called artificial intelligence, I would have missed my train to Normandy. If it's truly intelligence, it should have learned about the route and not suggested it. Let's call this tech LLMs instead of AI for now. Number three, Google Translate and Maps gets an A+. Love the show. John in Cincinnati. P.S. I forgot to mention using Circle to Search is a great way to find out information on what building you are looking at. In an old city like Paris, it is wonderful to have an historical guide in the palm of your hand.
No kidding.
I agree nice. To pretty much a lot of stuff that you said, John. That's, yeah. I agree.
I like that tales of travel. I do like that.
I would definitely caution you on trusting that an AI output for, you know, travel directions and stuff is going to actually get you to the place. It sounds like the kind of thing that it should get right, but I mean, AI is just, you know, oh, sorry, LLMs. They're just not 100% there. You can't, like, you know, 100% just trust what it puts out. And if you do, you're probably going to end up in a situation that you'll be upset with.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's a good point to point out that AI, that LLMs are AI, but not all AI is LLMs. Yep. I mean, it is more Jason's wheelhouse, but I think that's like a very fair point to make, is that don't treat an LLM like a general intelligence thing.
Yeah, yep. AI as a terminology gets thrown around a lot these days. I know I'm guilty of it too. I mean,
you have a whole show about it. So, going back to the Pixel Watch 2, I refuse to accept this, defeat. Jason, I threw some links in the chat for us to talk about. So, I quickly found two things. One, that there is a Wear OS app out called Feel the Wear 2 Notifications. That works on Wear OS 3.0 watches that claims they allow you to set custom vibrations and sounds for your app's notifications. So some people are saying you can change the ringtone there with it. So your mileage may vary. It costs $219 to try. Michelle, like you mentioned, if you're comfortable hacking and using ADB, there's a app called Wear OS Tools version 8. Which is a Reddit thread up. Just search Wear OS Tools V8, and you'll find all the stuff you can do, and you can change the ringtone and a lot of other stuff that you could do, make modifications there for it. But you've got to be very technically savvy in order to do that. And I cannot believe they removed it from the Pixel 2 watch as just a standard thing that you can do as a user. That is insane.
That is weird.
I still like it, but that's funky chicken.
It's wild. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
Well, that'll do.
Good sleuthing, Ron.
Yes. So everybody, email us at contact@androidfaithful.com. We'd love to hear from you and your questions and problems and all that fun stuff. But now we're going to wrap up the show, and we want to tell you where you can find out more about all of us. Jason, tell us about the aforementioned AI show.
What? Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. We can do that. I do a show every Wednesday with Jeff Jarvis called AI Inside. And if you go to AIinside.show, That is the podcast page where you can find all the ways to subscribe. There are video versions that are actually out as well on the Yellow Gold Studios YouTube page. So if you go to AIinsight.show, you can subscribe to the audio and you can link to the video for each of the episodes. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot about AI. That's part of the reason why I wanted to do a show about AI was to learn more about it. Turns out doing a show about something is a great way to learn about it.
It's a good lesson to be learned there.
Right? Yes, yes, indeed.
Cool. So, Michelle, if people want to hear more about Android 15 beta, where can they find that?
You can follow me on all the socials like Twitter, Mastodon, Threads, Telegram, etc. at Michelle Rahman. I actually, if you want to find all my links, because there's so many of them, you can go to my Linktree, which is like linktree.com/ I think it's like link.tree or something like that. Anyways, yeah. You just go to my socials. I link it everywhere. That has all my links. And if you want to support my work, you can go to patreon.com/RahmanRahman and join my Discord group, which you get access to by subscribing for at least $3 a month. I also occasionally post some exclusive member-only content. And the Discord group actually is where I share a lot of my thoughts and a lot of the things that I'm working on ahead of time before I share it publicly, you know, through articles or through social media posts. So, sign up if you want to learn more about Android 15, because I assure you there's so much more Android 15 content left to be posted about. Like my backlog is massive.
More than you can shake a stick at. All right. Wynn, how about you?
Yeah. Hi, I'm an Android dev. I have been for almost 13 years now, and I still love this job, and I often talk about this job, and you can find associated talks about Android development and Kotlin on my website, randomlytyping.com, as well as video and code that goes with them. And you can find me on the social medias at QueenCodeMonkey, but it's mostly Instagram, but yeah, I'm there too. And if you follow me on Twix, thank you, but I just don't really post there anymore or other places, but I'll try. Not on Twix, other planks. Anyway, that's me. Now shut up now.
And on my side of the fence, I'm at RonXO in some way, shape, or form across all the various social medias. And also, as I mentioned before, me and my friends have an app called Scorebit that helps you keep track of your scores on pinball. If you're into playing pinball, we just released an update to that app. I think it came out the week I was out, so I'm finally mentioning it. But yeah, so very, very excited. I've been working on this for a while. We added a new feature where you can have an interactive score timeline for our video viewers. Jason, if you scroll down, we have a little gift that shows how you use it. But a lot of big thing about pinball is, like, you know, people get these crazy scores and you're like, how did they do it? And this kind of visualizes it to show you over time how the score happened and what kind of jackpots they got and what kind of modes they played and all that fun stuff.
That's so, a single game that you're looking
that's
at?
That's a single game that we're looking at that shows how somebody got to their final score.
That's really neat.
Love it. It's very, very cool. And we're just scratching the surface what we can do with that. So it's really exciting.
Nice.
So yeah, so you can get it in the Google Play Store. It's called Scorebit. Just search Scorebit Pinball. And you can be able to find it there. Thanks, everybody. And that's going to wrap us up for this evening. What a wonderful show.
What a wonderful show.
Good times. Quick reminder, you can get everything at androidfaithful.com. You can find links to subscribe to the show, links to our merch over at Threadless where you can get our t-shirt, all the fun links. It's all there. And of course, you can support us at patreon.com/androidfaithful. We thank everyone who does it. We're on social media. We're on Twix. We're on Facebook. We're on Threads. We're on Blue Sky. We're on everything. It's all out there. Just go find us there. And we publish every Tuesday night. We hope you enjoy it. And until next time, we are the Android Faithful.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.